Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. About to have a really sexy voice because I feel like I'm getting sick.
Oh, of course you are, right before your trip.
Well, it's better that way, isn't it? I feel like I should go licking children at the preschool.
Okay.
Just to get it over with, because I feel like when I get there, I'll probably get sick. I usually do.
I'm sure their parents won't mind.
Yeah. I'm just taking your child's lurky. Don't worry. Yeah. So I started sniffling last night and I'm just like, oh, good. Here it comes.
Well, you got your vitamin C and all that.
I got my vitamin seed, as the girls call it, vitamin seed. Yes, I do. And yeah, I'll be pounding
elderberry.
That. Yeah. You know what I need to do is get an IV.
Mm-hmm.
One of those vitamin ID.
Yes, that.
Vitamin IDs. What? What is wrong with me? See, it's IV. Taking over my brain now.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last I've seen time people. I got one
mm-hmm.
with Dusty,
okay.
I stayed healthy for a really long time, like a good chunk of time.
Do you know where to get one of those?
There's a lot of places around here that do them. Anyway, so, well, enough of the rigmarole.
Yeah.
Should we just...
Let's dive in.
This one's a... Whoa.
Taking us on a roller coaster.
I had chills about this one.
Mm.
Like, and I did not see... it coming, the ending.
Really?
I did not see that coming. So, buckle up. It was
Click.
November 8th. It was November 8th, 1999. Two maintenance workers at Memorial Hospital in Colorado Springs were doing some work in like a secluded part of the hospital when they made a gruesome discovery.
Ooh.
They'd gone up to the 8th floor to service an elevator or something. It's kind of unclear like what exactly they were doing because, I mean, they're maintenance men. They've got all these kinds of things to do.
Sure.
But as they entered the area, they smelled this foul smell. And the area of the hospital that they were in was under construction. And it was adjacent to like the helipad on top of the hospital building. So access was very limited to this floor anyways. Only people who were doing work in there had keys to the floor.
So it wasn't like there's patients up there and there's
right.
like
yeah, no. And it wasn't like someone would have just not taken out the trash because there wasn't a functioning area of
gotcha.
The hospital. So they're like maybe an animal got in or
okay.
something and just died in a corner. Well, they finished up what they were doing and when they headed back downstairs to leave, they smelled it again.
Oh.
And it was really strong right in the area, like at the base of the stairs. So they decided to check it out.
Yeah.
One of the men walked around to the back of the stairs and he saw a body wrapped in a sheet of plastic secured with a duct tape.
Oh. Ooh.
Think of like in a horror movie when they kill somebody and wrap them in plastic and then duct tape their head and their
right.
feet.
I'm
that's it.
Yeah, you gave me a picture
yes,
that I don't like.
I know.
Okay.
It wouldn't take them long though to surmise who that person was because you see there was a young hospital employee that had gone missing 3 days before on November 5th. So 23-year-old Jennifer Lee Watkins was one of four children. She was especially close to her younger brother. And in high school, she loved spending time with her friends and playing the clarinet in band. Lena reads, am I right? She used to have this little like compartment of reeds and I always thought it was so cool. Like this little box of reeds. Anyway, back to the story. When she graduated from Hanover High School, she attended Barnes Business College and that's where she reconnected with someone from her childhood, a guy named Michael Watkins. Her mother, Irene, was not really a fan of Michael. I think they knew each other in grade school, and she just felt like the minute Jennifer and Michael moved in together, it was toxic from the word go.
Oh, no.
But they married and had two children, you know, as you do.
Sure.
Michael got a job at Memorial Hospital in Colorado Springs in housekeeping, and he also did some maintenance work there, too. In high school, Jennifer really wanted to be a nurse. Like, that was just her high school dream. So she thought, what a great career move if I worked there too and just got like my foot in the door.
Right.
Working in a hospital environment. It didn't really matter what she was doing. She didn't really care where she started out as long as she could rub shoulders with the, you know, physicians and the nurses.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of
work her way up.
Yeah, exactly. Network.
Yeah.
So she began working in food services. Not the most glamorous position, but she had a great attitude and was really well liked by her coworkers. She was really friendly with her coworkers and the patients, and no one had a bad thing to say about her.
Mm.
Well, Jennifer didn't return home from working the day shift at the hospital, which would have wrapped up at about 6:30 on November 5th.
Okay.
So for the kitchen workers, there were a number of like different things they could be tasked with on any given day. On this day, though, Jennifer was on the food service cart. So taking the cart around to people's rooms and dropping off their food, picking up their empty trays and such. It was seemingly a normal day for her. Other than the fact that the food carts that Jennifer was responsible for clearing up at the end of her shift were still kicking around about 7 p.m. With trays of like half-eaten food on them. So her supervisor was really surprised because she wasn't sloppy like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was meant to leave at 6:30, yet the carts were still all out and gross.
Yeah, she wanted to do a good job so that she could be seen.
And he knew that wasn't like her.
Right.
So he was like, well, she's gone. So he presumed she was gone home. So he and some of the other coworkers cleaned up the carts and trays and moved on with the night shift duties. They didn't give it another thought, really. But Jennifer hadn't gone home. Because when Jennifer's husband, Michael, woke up to get ready for work, she wasn't there. Michael worked the night shift, so he'd usually sleep during the day while Jennifer was at work until about 8 p.m. when he'd get up and get ready for work. So he admitted that on that night, he overslept and he didn't wake up till about 8:30. But he was surprised when he woke up and Jennifer and the kids weren't home. So he called his mother-in-law, who kept their kids during the day, to see if Jennifer was there or had been there to pick up the kids.
Right.
But she hadn't. Her mother still had the children.
And was she concerned about that? Was that not...
You know, I think it was one of those things where she was just like, well, you know, we'll give her some more time to get here. And
maybe
then...
they just asked her to work late.
Yeah. And I don't think she was concerned until Michael called and said, have you seen Jennifer? So they called the hospital. And they were like, is she still there? Is she working late? Is she covering for someone maybe? And they found out that she wasn't there. So they called the police immediately and reported her missing. She wouldn't miss picking up her kids. That was the kicker right there.
Yeah.
That was like the thing, like, it's okay to say, oh, someone's running late, but without a call.
Right.
To
like,
say,
hey, I'm
going to
run
late.
By the grocery store.
Exactly. And, yeah. They just knew it wasn't like her, and they were like, something's the matter. So thanks to Jennifer's husband, Michael, police learned that Jennifer's car was actually still at the hospital in the off-site parking lot where the employees routinely parked near the intersection of Printers Parkway and East Peak Avenue. Michael and her mother were hands-on from the word go. They were just, let's find her.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably what happened. They drove up there and saw her car. And that's how police found out. But unfortunately, a search of the vehicle didn't yield any information as to where she could be. The fact that her car was still at the hospital and those food carts having been left out actually suggested that she went missing during her shift.
Yeah.
So they really tried to focus on the hospital. Like, where is she? In the hospital, you know? So while authorities were conducting interviews with hospital personnel, from admin to surgeons, housekeeping to directors. Michael was up in the hospital himself and he was mad.
Oh.
He's like, y'all need to go look around and find my wife.
Yes, please.
there are only so many places she could be. And he also said some weird things like, have y'all looked in places where someone would dump a dead body?
What?
Yeah. At this point, he was making...
I'm sure there's lots of things going through his mind.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a possibility. I mean, like, she's nowhere to be found. She's probably stuffed somewhere.
You know, we all say, I would never say something like that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I would never say something like that. I mean, if I was looking for Daniel, yeah. I wouldn't be like, can you look where people stuff dead bodies? Like, I just don't think I could utter those words like think the unthinkable right away. I'd probably think it, but I probably wouldn't say something like that. But we're dealing with a different guy here.
True.
Like,
I'm sorry, what year was this?
1999.
So not really a lot of cameras around.
Oh, we'll get to the cameras.
Okay, I'll wait.
In fact, we're going to get to them sooner than later.
Okay.
But at this point, Michael was making enemies. Well, you know, he's being a jerk. Okay. He's being a jerk. And so people were like, you're annoying. We've already told you we don't know where she is.
But you're making this harder.
Yeah. But also they really didn't know where she was. Like, they didn't have anything to tell them. Like, I don't know what to tell you. She's not here, or we haven't seen her. So something that might have been really useful, Lena, in the investigation into Jennifer's disappearance would have been CCTV.
Uh-huh.
If it wasn't so 90s.
Yeah.
There were cameras.
Okay.
All over the hospital.
Well, let's review them.
In every hallway, every floor, every wing. But the footage was absolutely useless.
Why?
The images were so bad that you couldn't really tell who was even a man or a woman or an alien.
Oh, no.
You certainly couldn't identify who Jennifer was in the videos. So really? You couldn't identify where she'd been.
Oh, man. Did they know their cameras were not very good?
You know, that's the thing. I wonder, like, when people are setting up shop.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, I'll just take that. The lowest package you have for the cameras. Like, we're never going to need them.
Yeah.
Well, we're never going to need them.
Yeah. But just in case, we got this that'll show
a shadow. And, you know, I think they were those cameras. You know those cameras that used to be all over the stores? Like those black domes on the ceiling?
Okay.
So I'm not sure what they were capable of, but they were garbage and they were useless.
Okay.
So around 10 a.m. on November 8th, while even more hospital staff were being interviewed by detectives, those maintenance workers found Jennifer's body.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot even begin to imagine the task of organizing a murder investigation when your crime scene is a hospital. Right. I mean, the amount of people coming and going each day, each hour.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point.
You've got employees of all positions rotating in and out.
Maintenance men.
Yes. You've got patients.
Uh-huh.
And various visitors of the patients cycling in and out. Like, what a monumental mountain to climb. Oh, I can't even imagine. I digress. Hmm. When Jennifer's body was found, that secluded stairwell was packed with investigators from the crime lab, the El Paso County Coroner's Office, and the homicide unit. From my research, it seems like they cut open the plastic right there at the scene and observed the body to be a Caucasian female dressed in a purple top, black pants, and teal hospital smock.
Mm.
I think it's pretty typical to just, like, open it real quick and then take everything, like, scoop it all up and make sure you don't lose any evidence.
Yeah.
That's just what I've think happens and like, seems like a smart thing to do rather than open it all up right there.
Oh,
but they made some observations at the scene. Her clothing had been jostled around and her pants were pulled down, insinuating a sexual assault. Mm. Dr. David Bowerman, the El Paso County coroner, positively identified the body as Jennifer Watkins, and it was clear that she had been murdered by means of blunt force trauma to the head. because they suspected that sexual assault, a rape kit was performed, and they did find semen inside of Jennifer's body.
Oh.
Something else that was interesting that may or may not have contributed to her death was actually that she had a previous head injury. Like, I don't know if it was years before, months before, but she had sort of like a soft spot on the back of her skull. It was like a weaker area of her skull. I couldn't find anything to suggest that this was an area of significance, like this was the area that was hit and caused her death. But I just thought that was a really interesting piece. Like,
yeah.
So the plastic sheeting that Jennifer's body was wrapped in was also thoroughly examined. Some fibers and hairs were found inside, as well as a yellow, white stain, which turned out to be semen.
Oh, goodness.
They also found semen on Jennifer's pants, which matched the semen found on the plastic sheeting. Surprisingly, though, the DNA profile from Jennifer's body did not match the profile found on the pants and the plastic.
Okay.
So there were two distinct male contributors.
No way.
Yeah. Authorities still had so many questions, who being the most obvious one, but also Jennifer didn't have access to the eighth floor. And besides, she had no reason to be there. It's not like she was taking food to anyone. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Nobody was in there. No patients were in there. So why was she there? How did she get in there?
Yeah. I'm trying to envision her last
I know.
Moments.
Like, how could... Yeah. And the only people with keys to that restricted area were people that needed to get to that helipad or the maintenance men. But the maintenance men had keys to all areas of the hospital. I mean... So they just started with the maintenance men. All those maintenance men were interviewed and pretty much cleared right away. Those that worked the day Jennifer was murdered seemed to have somewhat of a log of what they had been doing at the time, like a full day of stuff that they had been doing.
Okay.
So I don't know what they used to clear them, but they moved on pretty quickly from the maintenance.
Or,
men.
I mean, did they say what time they left for the day? Like,
I don't have details about their those statements or anything okay. like that. It just seemed like, oh, there was nothing remarkable there, you know?
Okay.
Then there was this one guy that also worked in food services that they looked at. His name was Curtis Burchard. He had a criminal record. He was on probation for a murder that he claimed was self-defense.
What?
Yeah. So when Jennifer went missing and before she was found, Curtis made a hasty exit out of Colorado Springs and didn't even pick up his most recent paycheck.
Oh, bye y'all.
Right. He even left some of the things behind in the hotel he was living in. And can I just say, next time I'm in the hospital, I'll be side-eyeing the person who brings me my food. If that's how y'all gonna play it. Okay? If y'all gonna be employing convicted people who are on probation for murder. Just saying.
I mean, right? Like, was he...
Anywho.
What in the world?
So, Curtis seems like the guy. You know what I mean? Like, what are the odds that Jennifer would be working with a convicted murderer and now she turns up murdered? After tracking him down in California, when he was questioned, he told police that he took off because Jennifer was missing. He knew that with his record, they'd surely look at him, and he was terrified that he, a black man with a criminal record, would take the fall for the crime.
Sure. I can see the...
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I get it. Mm-hmm. Looks terrible, Curtis. Can
sure
I just
does.
Say... Pick up your paycheck at least. And you know what I mean? Like, clean out your hotel room. That was pretty hasty of you. I think they were able to verify his movements the day of, stuff like that. And he just seemed like he wasn't their guy, even though he made himself look like their guy.
He's like, I can't be connected to another
I know.
Thing. Yeah.
The other thing was, is he willingly gave a sample of his DNA.
Okay.
And it was not a match.
Oh, okay.
For
well, that does.
Yeah. So
that does help.
You know, with all this considered, he was kind of moved on from. Now, detectives circled back, though, around to Michael Watkins, and he mentioned someone he was suspicious of. get out your cork boards and your colored push pins and your yarn.
Yeah,
because you're going to need it for this one. Okay. Jennifer had this ex-boyfriend named James Cook, and he was now married to Michael's sister.
Okay.
James Cook, who was Jennifer's ex, was now her brother-in-law.
Okay.
And Michael's brother-in-law. And Michael said that he was obsessed with her.
Oh.
Would call her, harass her, wanting to get back together.
Ew.
But when they talked to James, James was like, no. Like, Jennifer's family? Ugh. Yeah, I talked to her.
We dated married. In the past.
But the past is the past, and like, I'm married, she's married. Okay. It wasn't like that. So after a little more due diligence, police ruled him out. And I can't speak for detectives, but I'd be mad, okay? I'd be mad if someone gave me some flimsy information that sent me barking up the wrong tree.
And why?
Like, why
are you trying to lead me in a direction that is not true?
I know. And the detectives were probably a bit annoyed, but it didn't help that Michael had sort of painted a target on his back with his outbursts and, you know, those early days of Jennifer's disappearance. Then there were those comments about checking any corner of a hospital where a body could be dumped. And that was before her body was found. Dumped in a secluded part of the hospital. But now Michael's pointing the investigation away from himself.
Yeah.
So they got Michael in for another interview.
Yeah.
They're like, why are you lying to us, Michael? What's with this insecurity about James Cook? Well, maybe this was why. Jennifer's coworkers and her own mother told investigators that Jennifer and her husband didn't have a good relationship. You remember that toxic beginning? Well, it was just downhill from there.
Okay.
Michael had a bit of a hair trigger temper, and he could be really volatile. He was combative with Jennifer's family and coworkers during those early days of the investigation. I think they were side-eyeing him, and he was being real defensive about that. And detectives also found it difficult to talk to him because he was such a hothead, you know?
I can see that.
Yeah, and at the time of Jennifer's murder, Michael was on probation for an incident with a pellet gun. Now, I don't know the details of this. Whatever it was serious enough for him to be on probation for it.
Okay.
So there was a conviction, a punishment, and he was on probation. So I don't know.
Some kind of aggravated assault. I don't know.
With a pellet gun? I don't know. And actually, Jennifer had driven Michael to and from his appointment with his probation officer that day that she went missing. And it made her late to work that day.
Oh.
So, and let's not forget, Michael works at the hospital.
Yeah.
Where Jennifer went missing. And so he's supposedly at home asleep when she goes missing, but who can verify that? Nobody else was there.
Mm-hmm.
He told police that both he and Jennifer had affairs at one point or another.
Okay.
But he swore he didn't and wouldn't kill his wife. He wouldn't take his children's mother away from them. Now, it was true that Jennifer had cheated on her husband. She'd become extremely unhappy in her marriage, which, by the way, people, is not a reason to cheat. But she was just done. She really was. She had one foot out the door. And with this new job of hers at the hospital, she was finally making money of her own.
Okay.
And that gave her this like independence and autonomy that she'd long since forgot about. Jennifer was looking forward to saving up her money and getting stable enough to get her own place and leave Michael. Maybe Michael knew she was going to leave him and he stopped her.
Yeah.
Now, he sure did move on quickly immediately after Jennifer died because he started dating this woman named Crystal.
Why do they always do that?
Right after Jennifer's body was... I swear a man cannot stay single.
Why do they always
do that? A man cannot be alone.
Like...
Daniel. Yeah. Okay? Daniel, moving on when I die.
I'm not going to let that happen.
I will haunt. There's plenty of people in our family to help take care of them kids. You do not need a woman, okay? Bye. Anyway. So all of this circumstance amounted to a convincing enough molehill for the police to really scrutinize Michael a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, police secured a search warrant and headed over to the Watkins home, ready for some answers. They're like, this is it. We're going to find something here. Everything looked pretty normal on the surface. The house was unremarkable. Now, while searching through some of Michael's clothing, they found some pants with a dark stain on them, which they believed to be blood. And that was really the only thing that raised their eyebrows in that search. But after analysis, the stain, although proven to be blood, was just Michael's blood.
Okay. What was his reason? Like, did he cut himself?
I don't know. I mean, he worked in the hospital. He was doing like housekeeping and he did do maintenance stuff at the hospital. So could have been any of those things. Michael was asked to take a polygraph. And at this point in the investigation, where he started out being really angry and hostile with the detectives, he was starting to soften up now. And he agreed to take a polygraph and he passed. I think he was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. Y'all are looking at me. So he became more cooperative at that point. And I'm not going to say that investigators cleared Michael at this point, because there was just so much about him that felt like red flag after red flag, but they truly had nothing to connect him with his wife's murder. Even the circumstantial evidence didn't paint a picture of Michael being the killer. It wasn't long after Michael passed that polygraph that the case pretty much became stagnant.
Ugh.
Months had passed and even more months followed, and then years.
No.
Yeah. Jennifer's family longed for answers and justice. And those hospital employees probably had a chill going down their spine every time they arrived for work at their shift.
Yeah. Do they have to look behind their shoulders?
Right. Like, this killer could still be working here. And they did believe that it was someone, likely an employee, that had killed her. Otherwise, how would they have accessed that area of the building? I imagine the sense of safety of the hospital was ruined.
Yeah.
Like, I always feel safe in a hospital, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, they have security. Yeah.
And like, my girls, you know, when they were in having their surgeries and I spent the night at the hospital, you know, like, the nurses coming in and out. Like, I just feel like there's so many people about that the chances of something bad happening, you know, I always feel safe in a hospital.
Well, these days, like, I work for a hospital system, and even I mean, I work from home, but even I have to go through like active shooter trainings and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I mean,
these days it seems like there's a lot more precaution. But in the 90s,
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just can't imagine having to go to work every day not knowing for years.
Yeah.
I wonder if a lot of people was like, oh, I'm going to transfer to another hospital. But in 2017, cold case detectives took another look at this case file. Now, DNA technology had unfurled into a living, breathing, crime-fighting machine. Though CODIS was operational in 1998, it wasn't beefy, you know, like in 1999 when they needed it to be beefy. I feel like CODIS is only as good as the number of profiles that you have on file, right? So by 2017, CODIS was beefy.
Yeah.
And they got a hit on one of the semen profiles
left
on Jennifer's remains. The semen found inside Jennifer's body.
Okay.
It belonged to her husband.
Well,
Michael Watkins.
Of course.
And so they were like, okay. So they went and talked to him and he was like, yeah, I was married to her and we did have sex.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like, we had sex a couple days before, you know, she went missing and there was still love there. It's just because we were not really friendly.
Yeah.
We shared a bed.
I saw that coming, really.
Yeah. So Michael couldn't help shed light, though, on who that other profile belonged to. He's like, I don't know. The owner of that other profile wasn't in CODIS. So how to find him? Well, science. CC Moore at Parabon Nano Labs.
Oh,
is
Cece.
A hero. Oh, Cece. I just want to invite her over for dinner and just like talk to her for hours.
If you're listening, contact Cece. Us.
I mean, she's been on so many shows and helped crack so many cold cases. through genetic genealogy.
Yeah.
In 2018, Cece and her team were able to create a profile using phenotyping, which is done, if you don't know, using DNA profile to produce a physical rendering of the individual that DNA belongs to. Now, a sketch was generated and the killer was presumed to be about 25 years old, of northern eastern descent, with fair skin and fair hair and blue or green eyes.
Oh, that is really cool.
Yeah. And I say killer because now they believed that the other DNA profile did belong to the killer. The DNA wasn't found in Jennifer's body. It was found on her pants, mm-hmm. on the plastic. So it's starting to seem like, yeah, Michael wasn't the guy, because you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
who else?
If this is a whole nother profile and it was on the plastic she was wrapped in.
Yeah.
That's the killer, right? They released a sketch to the public in 2018 of this rendering that they got. And I'll post it on our Patreon for your viewing pleasure. But another year passed with no tips relating to this Parabon rendering. But it wasn't Cece's first rodeo, okay? She was like, I don't even need this picture, okay? By August of 2020, when we were all searching for toilet paper, after using familial DNA submissions to build out a family tree, they matched the DNA to someone that had family in Colorado Springs back in 1999.
Okay.
Now, through a process of elimination, they identified a man named Ricky Sievert as being the likely contributor.
Who? Yeah, who's Ricky?
Ricky, who? <hey? laughs> Well, we didn't talk about him. Cold case detectives realized that Ricky Sievert was a maintenance man.
Mm-hmm.
That probably Shocking. Was one of the very first to be questioned in the original case. And he looked very similar to the phenotype sketch that Parabon released.
Wow.
They weren't going to be able to get Ricky's DNA, though.
Why?
Because he died in a car accident.
Really?
In 2001. Just a couple years after Jennifer was murdered.
No way.
And his body was cremated.
No.
Mm-hmm. The only way to get a match now was to find a direct relative. Now, Ricky had a daughter. And so investigators visited Ricky's widow. And can you just imagine getting this knock on your door?
No. Mm-mm.
I mean, I cannot imagine.
After all these years.
After all these years. But thankfully, she consented to them obtaining a sample from their daughter. And the daughter's DNA was a familial match to the semen found on Jennifer's body.
Wow.
A press release said, quote, in September 2020, CBI conducted an analysis of the DNA and determined that the percentage of the population that can be excluded as a contributor of the DNA collected in this case is 99.99994%. Mr. Sievert cannot be excluded, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, they closed the case and classified it as, quote, exceptionally cleared / death of offender, end quote. Now, Colorado Springs Police Department Chief Vince Niskey said, quote, after all these years, we are grateful to finally give Jennifer Watkins' family the answers they deserve. No matter the length of time, we will always work to serve this community. And I'm proud of all the cold case detectives throughout the last 21 years who have never stopped working for Miss Watkins. Not for one moment did they ever lose sight of what was most important: finding the truth for the Watkins family.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you to our partners. We would not have been able to solve this case without your time, skill, and dedication. I assume they're talking about Parabon.
Oh, yeah.
Really, why is the mystery here?
Okay, yes.
So police believe there might have been some disagreement between Ricky and Jennifer, though no one could say what that was.
Mm-hmm.
No one was witness to any such disagreement or interaction in any way, shape, or form. Like, nobody even saw them talking that day or remembered them talking. And we'll never know. Yeah, we'll never know what went down because Jennifer and her killer are both dead.
What I would like to know is what he said when he was interviewed that first time.
Mm-hmm.
And
me too.
What were his actions after the day she went missing, after the day she was found? What was his demeanor?
I know, because he should have been clenching his butt cheeks.
Yeah.
Because he was one of the only people to have access to the area she was found in.
Right.
But it seems like he just went on with his life. Like, he was married, he had a child.
Yeah.
He just carried on. We also don't know if they had any type of relationship other than just running into each other at work.
Gotcha. Like, yeah.
No one in Jennifer's circle could say one way or the other.
Mm.
What if they had a fling?
Mm.
What if they flirted at work? What if she rebuffed him that day? Or I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what happened. How did he get her to the 8th floor? How did he get her there? The ending of the story may fall flat for some, but it doesn't negate the hard work of the detectives more than 2 decades after Jennifer's murder.
Mm.
They just never gave up. Our killer may be dead, but you know what? His name is tarnished.
Wow.
I mean, and there's some justice in that. Like, I bet when he died, people mourned him and thought, what a tragic accident. Like, and then all this time later, they're shocked to realize that he brutally murdered a woman and then just went about his business afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the devastation for his loved ones is not something he obviously cannot reconcile that. He can't say.
Exactly. And that's what I feel like is like a double tragedy.
Yeah.
Is now they have to live with this memory of him. And it's, you're, like you said, not reconcilable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not. And, you know, some people can at least face their husband and say, did you really do this? Like, and they can work through that.
Yeah.
But his family are definitely victims in some way, shape or form. It's crazy just how that worked out. So, but really this isn't about him and his family. This is about Jennifer and how 2 children lost their mother.
Yes.
For nothing.
No. Wow.
For nothing. In so many ways, her life was just beginning. She had found this strength within herself to work hard and pull herself out of this like toxic relationship. And even though I'm sure she was probably scared of the devil she didn't know, which is making it on her own, she was still willing to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just so sorry to her that she didn't get that chance to see what she was capable of on her own.
Well, I'm thankful for the angels here on earth that are willing to put so much effort and like they're so smart to be able to use science and give answers for Jennifer.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. There must be a hunger like to those people that just, I mean, because you have to reckon they get paid salary. And money makes the world go round. So they're not getting paid extra to work overtime or this, that, and the other.
It's their passion.
So it's their, they just have this drive. Like, I've got to figure this out.
And then it makes me think, like, what am I doing with my life? We're sitting here talking about it.
We're sitting at a dining table talking. But, you know, I still have a question. Where did he kill her? Where? Because there was no reports about blood being found anywhere else in the vicinity or any other place in the hospital. Was there? And they just chalked it up to, I mean, it's a hospital. You've got biological fluids being spewed about every day all over the place. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
no. And
did he lay out the plastic and be like, get on?
I mean, because
I'm going to beat you now.
Well, I don't want to accuse her of anything and tarnish her memory.
Right.
But I mean, if she did go meet up with him, she probably went up there, met him.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe got on the plastic. I mean, it's It's a maintenance area. It's a construction site.
Secluded. But you know what else? But she left all those carts out. I just feel like she would have been, let me put this stuff away and I'll meet you in like 5 minutes. You know what Maybe. I mean? Like, I just, it seems like if she was being clandestine, she yeah. wouldn't have left a trail of the fact that she was missing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know, but maybe you're right. Maybe she thought she'd only be gone for 15 minutes yeah. and she'd be right back. And, you know, we Who just knows? Don't know.
Yeah.
We will never know. And that is the wild thing about it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, goodness.
May you rest in peace.
Thank you for telling her story. Yes. Fly high.
Fly high, Jennifer.
Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.